Well, President Trump returns to the United States today, ending his 12-day tour of Asia. He spoke to reporters this morning aboard Air Force One.
I think one of the things we really accomplished big is relationship, and also letting people know that from now on, things are going to be reciprocal. We can't have trade deficits of 30, 40, 50 billion, 300 billion in the case of China. We can't do that. We have to have reciprocal trade. What's good for them is good for us.
Trade was just one of the items on the trip's agenda, which also included tough talk on North Korea's nuclear program. Richard Haass is the president of the Council on Foreign Relations and author of the book A World in Disarray. He joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you.
And the White House is touting this trip as a victory for U.S. companies and for international trade. What's your assessment of Trump's trip to Asia?
Well, it's odd they would single that out because that's arguably the weakest part of the trip. The fact that the United States stayed outside of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the principal regional trading mechanism right now, will hurt American exporters, whether they're agricultural exporters, manufacturing, whether in the financial services businesses. We won't have the kind of market access we need. It'll weaken our ability to set standards and rules throughout the region that would be in our interest. And these individual deals that are going to be announced won't begin to offset that loss.
And many of the other countries that were a part of the TPP deal are going ahead with it. They're going to be in that deal.
Absolutely. They are going to go ahead with it. And China won't be in it. China's going to go ahead with its own trading scheme. But the fact that the United States is not going to be a part of the TPP essentially reduces its size by half. So, again, it weakens what something that we helped negotiate, but we're now not going to be a part of it.
One of the storylines that has come out of this trip is that world leaders have learned how to play President Trump, that all you have to do is flatter him, give him a big military parade to welcome him to the country, and he'll do what you want. Is that your assessment?
I think a little bit of that seems to be true. You had the first such episode when he went to Saudi Arabia, the first foreign trip of his presidency. You had a version of it here in China with the time spent in the Forbidden City in Beijing. And the president is prone to that. It's not simply his talk about the red carpet, but he keeps talking about personal relationships. Now, he's not the first president to exaggerate the significance of relationships. FDR did it with Stalin, and virtually every president since has done it to some extent. But this president has raised it to a new level, and I think he overlooks the fact that other leaders may see a good relationship as a tactic towards the strategic end of advancing what they see as their own interests.
Well, on that score, what did you make of President Trump saying that President Putin told him he didn't meddle in our election and he believes him?
Well, that was one of the low points of the trip. It was a major distraction. The fact that he was so critical of former intelligence officials on foreign soil only added to it. Look, it wasn't a departure. This president has been strangely benign towards Russia from the get-go, and I think it's a mistake because Russia needs to be called out and pay a price anytime it violates the norms of international relations as we see them, whether it's their conquest of Crimea, whether it's their indiscriminate use of force in Syria, or whether it's meddling in our elections.
Another pattern that we noticed on this trip is that sometimes President Trump would meet with the leader of another country and then they would come out and say, the president did raise this issue with, for example, President Duterte of the Philippines. He did bring up human rights. And then the president of the Philippines comes out with a statement and says it was never raised. What do you make of that?
Just that if it was raised, it seems to have been simply to go through the motions. But the fact that the president, first of all, had a bilateral meeting with this someone who's been so associated with thousands of non-judicial murders in a place like the Philippines, I would have suggested if he has to go to the country for a regional meeting, he doesn't do a bilateral meeting. But then to do one and make no public criticism of what's going on there, it seems to me wrong for the long term in U.S.-Philippine relations because we associate ourselves so much with a leader who I predict will one day be extraordinarily unpopular in that country. But also, the United States foreign policy has to some extent also reflect our values. It has to reflect our DNA. And I think the president does himself and does this country no favor when he ignores the fact that we do stand for some things, or at least we're meant to.
Do you think the president made any progress on the situation in North Korea on this trip?
That's the most interesting question, quite possibly, and I don't think we know the answer. It obviously was discussed in his first three stops, in particular in Tokyo and Seoul in Beijing. The president's talk about the North Korean issue was more moderated, was more modulated, seemed to be more open to a diplomatic outcome. So I'm hoping that was the case, and we'll get a sense over time whether North Korea is at all interested in going down that path. I hope so, because the alternatives of either living with an ever larger North Korean nuclear and missile arsenal or going to war against North Korea, those alternatives are so unattractive that I hope some there'll be some return on the diplomatic investment of this trip.
That's Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.